Do you feel a shiver up your spine from fear? Yes, it's another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind. Amp up your imagination and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. The Doll of Death by Vivian Meek. It's only a question of time, of course, Vereker said quietly to the medical officer, as Mrs. Brandon collected her letters and left the Meek along with Post Hut and her little Goretta Bush cart. Dr. Strang lifted one eyebrow. Vereker, he said deliberately, during the 15 years I've known you, never once have you been guilty of indiscretion, rancor, or scandal-mongering, which is probably the reason why you are the youngest provincial commissioner in the service. What do you mean exactly? Brandon, as most of us know him, is a very decent chap, and she matches him to the soles of her dainty feet. They are among my best friends. That's why, Vereker said shortly. For a single second, he looked steadily at Strang, then without another word turned abruptly on his heel and joined the safari which was awaiting him. Before the medical officer had recovered from his surprise, the commissioner was striding ahead of his carriers down the new Boma road to the border. Strang watched the safari disappear into the distance before he moved into his own Mashila to continue his journey. He was glad now that there had been very little mail for him, for he admitted quite frankly that Vereker's few words had upset him considerably. Knowing Vereker as he did, he came to the conclusion at once that it would be a waste of time asking him to amplify his words. Vereker never amplified anything. Strang smiled whimsically as he thought of the man. Silent, even dour, honorable, clean living, strong in mind and body, the provincial commissioner was all that and more. His greatest virtue, failing as juniors called it, was an oyster-like propensity for keeping his thoughts to himself. Few men knew Africa so well. None had given her greater service. Idolized by the natives, he understood so well. Loved and respected by his fellow Europeans, he carried his power ably and well. Mikolongwe, all 80,000 square miles of it, was the safest province in Central Africa. To Vereker, almost entirely, was the credit due. It was no wonder, therefore, that his cryptic remark had upset Strang. But as there was nothing to be gained by considering the commissioner, the doctor focused his thoughts on the Brandons. Brandon was, as he had told Vereker, a decent fellow, a sahib. He had come out a few years previously, as had a number of ex-officers, to whom the idea of life of a suburban monotony was repugnant, and had taken up a block of land in this new country. He was a hard worker, and had been fairly successful. The Wattle and Daub shanty had soon given way to a homestead, and when he had married Shirley Trent a few months ago, the entire community of his scattered compatriots rejoiced. It had seemed preeminently an ideal marriage for Central Africa, for the bride was no inexperienced newcomer. She was familiar with all the drawbacks of a planter's life, having come out over 2 years before on a visit to her brother, whose plantation marched with Brandon's. Her sister-in-law, greedy of the company of another woman on a lonely farm, had persuaded her to make her home with them. Love had not come at first sight, for Shirley and Brandon had met constantly before they found themselves attracted to each other, though Brandon himself smilingly emphasized that he had loved his wife from the moment he met her. She was a most attractive girl, and it was currently believed that, in a land where white women were so few, she would have been married with a minimum of delay. There was no doubt that she could have done so had she chose. Strang, however, suddenly remembered that he had, long ago, heard a persistent rumor to the effect that it once looked very much like a match between her and Dick Everett, a planter down Nzawi way. But nothing had ever materialized, and the story had been consigned to the limbo of the lying jade. Still, in view of Vereker's remark, he tried to recall it. Not that there was much to recall. A few dances and a few motor rides when Everett and the girl had found themselves up at Zomba. That was all. As far as he knew, the man had never visited the Trents or known Brandon, while the latter never went up to Zomba, the Central African capital in the Highlands. So there he was. He shrugged his shoulders impatiently, back at the point from which he started. If it had not been for Rebecca, who had laid the train of thoughts, he would not have even considered the matter. But Rebecca, it was believed that there was not a single insignificant thing that occurred in his district that Rebecca did not know. After a while, the doctor smiled. He thought he saw the idea. Rebecca liked Mrs. Brandon very much, he knew. Obviously, a man hates the thought of any ill befalling a friend, but a big but. A friend is very seldom justified in coming between man and wife. Rebecca also knew that Strang was Brandon's best friend. Very soon, possibly, the doctor would be called in, both as friend and consultant. He could then do what he thought best. At any rate, Rebecca must have guessed that his words would have prepared Strang for something. Decent chap, Rebecca. But in the meantime, what was Rebecca thinking? And what in hell did he actually mean? For days, Strang worried, to such effect that he decided to turn back and go on to the Brandons. His plan was, however, upset by the arrival of a sweating runner, who gasped out the news that cholera had broken out on the Mekelongwe border, and it was 3 months before Strang's safari halted by the Brandon homestead again. Within 10 minutes of his arrival, he decided that the commissioner had for once made a mistake, whatever he had meant by his cryptic remark, but after a couple of days he felt vaguely unsettled again. There was no change in the Brandons since last he had seen them, at least no tangible change. Brandon himself seemed a trifle quieter than usual, that was all. A change for the better, Strang would have thought, had it not been for the remark of a wrecker's. Still, it was not as if Brandon had developed the habit of brooding, and there was certainly no doubt about the way he worshipped the very ground on which his wife trod. She was her own gay self, with perhaps the added dignity unconsciously developed by a woman who is loved. Strang damned a wrecker under his breath. His visit over, he continued his safari, inspecting his various charges along the trails to the border, and eventually returned to his headquarters in Zomba after 4 strenuous months in the bush. In accordance with custom, he repaired forthwith to the club to become almost immediately possessed of the news that Mrs. Brandon had eloped with Dick Everett a fortnight previously. The details were blessedly scant. No one seemed to know anything more than the bare facts. She had, it appeared, come up to Zomba to some friends for the King's birthday week. She had attended the ball at Government House and had danced twice only, with Everett. The next morning they had left together for Nawazi. Brandon? Strang asked quietly. The sneering answer was given that Brandon hadn't done a thing. In an hour the medical officer was on the road again. His safari came up with Varaka 3 days later. The commissioner listened patiently while Strang related the sorry tale. What's to be done now? He ended lamely, then added, have you seen Brandon? Rebecca nodded. Yes, he said quietly. Oh, don't be so damn monosyllabic, the doctor burst out impatiently. How did you know? He didn't wait for an answer, but went on. Can't you see how it's affecting me? It's affecting me, too. Then why the hell didn't you do something before this? Strang countered. Rebecca smiled grimly. I'm not omnipotent, he said. Then how did you know it was coming? The commissioner remained silent for a moment, then shrugged his shoulders. One gets a hunch sometimes. You going on to Brandon? Not at once. I only came to see you with a vague idea that we might both go on together. The other shook his head. I don't think we can do anything about it. You'd better go on, though. Brandon met Strang with his old welcoming smile. He heard his friend out quietly and then casually remark that the matter was not worth discussion. After that, neither by word nor deed did he make any reference to the affair, nor did he show the slightest emotion. All that he had apparently done was to have had removed every article that had belonged to his wife and to have locked her room. Everything had been put out of sight, except, incongruously enough, a doll of which she had been particularly fond. It had been there, laying in a corner by the gramophone. Strang noticed it particularly, because it seemed so pathetic and forlorn among surroundings which were now so very masculine. It was one of those elongated Pierrot rag dolls, with a china head and hands, one of the fantastic things given away to the feminine section of their clientele by the management of fashionable hotels on gala nights. Presumably Mrs. Brandon had brought it out with her as a souvenir of some dance at home. As he noticed it, he fancied it looked to him in an appealing way, but as that was obviously a silly fancy, he dismissed it with an impatient shrug of his shoulders. A few days on the estate convinced him that there was nothing that he could do. Brandon himself was inscrutable and gave no sign of his thoughts. Indeed, he might not have been thinking of the matter at all. Not by the slightest detail did he change his daily routine. The only difference Strang noticed was that at nights he excused himself after dinner and locked himself up in his room. The doctor was puzzled at Brandon's attitude and could not recall having met a similar case. But whatever the man's thoughts were, he was certainly master of himself. Strang stayed on till the limit of the time he could spare from his duties, and then left reluctantly, feeling absolutely baffled. When he had left the estate several miles behind him, he suddenly made up his mind that he would go through with his matter, whatever it cost him. He was certain that there was something more in it than met the eye. A vague premonition, he thought. But this is Africa, and it's good enough for me. I'll see Shirley. He ordered his safari to make for the Nazwadi border, and 2 days later crossed into the district presided over by his old friend Geoffrey Islet. Islet was surprised and delighted to see Strang. "But what in heaven's name has brought you here?" he asked. Strang did not beat about the bush. The other heard him out. Then he said thoughtfully, "Yes, I know Everett. He used to be rather a sweep at one time, but it seems to have changed the last year or two. Possibly the country's shaken him up. I'm surprised to hear he's done a thing like this, but quite frankly, I don't see what we can do about it. I'm not a custodian of anyone's morals, you know, and if a man chooses to live openly with another man's wife, it's nobody else's business. Brandon is entitled to a divorce, and if he went to Zomba, he could have it over in a week. This isn't Europe, thank heaven. But he won't even discuss the matter, I tell you, Islet. There's something about the whole business that frightens me. Something ontological. I know how Brandon used to look at his wife. Well, he'd better not try any revenge stunts here. Everett may not be an ace of trumps, but we don't stand for anything like that. The whole thing puzzles me beyond words, Strang emphasized again. Verrecker apparently saw it coming, and he won't say a word. Brandon got it in the neck, and he won't say a word either. I had to stake my life on Mrs. Brandon. Islet's Askari sergeant came up and saluted. He held out a letter. "Runner from New Donna, Everett Bwana," he said impersonally. Islet glanced through the note. He turned to the medical officer. "Here's your chance to play your stake," he said with a little smile. "Everett has been attacked by some mysterious malady with which she cannot deal. It must be serious or she would hardly have overridden the usual conventions to this extent. She asked for a doctor. Venters is a week's march away. Care to go?" He held out the letter. Strang nodded eagerly as he snatched up the note. The contents merely said what Islet had passed on. Possibly it was appendicitis. Strang set off at once. Everett's estate was 2 days' march away, and he wondered whether the planter was alive or dead by this time. Africa is a hard mistress. When the medical officer arrived at the plantation, he was amazed to see Everett calmly supervising the work on his fields. On catching sight of the safari, the planter left his work and came up to the track. The doctor tried to regard Everett impersonally, but feeling that this attitude was generated by the circumstances, he introduced himself and stated his mission courteously and explained how he came to be there instead of the Nazwadi doctor. Everett confirmed the letter. 5 nights ago, he said, he had been taken mysteriously ill. He had been seized with agonizing pains in the region of the heart and abdomen for which he had been at a loss to account. The usual limited medical knowledge possessed by a planner and the estate first aid outfit had not eased the agony. Alarmed, Mrs. Brandon had written to the commissioner, but shortly after the runner had left, the pain disappeared as suddenly as it had come. The symptoms puzzled Strang. It looked as if he might have to stay some time, and as the situation would indubitably be strained by his presence, he thought it better to say something to Everett in connection with his friendship with the Brandons. "Look here, Everett," he began without preamble. "Before we go any further, I'm going to ask you to remember that I'm here as a doctor. I'm aware of certain recent circumstances, but do not propose, should you ask me to prescribe for you, to let that influence my attitude to you one way or another. In a small community, as you know, feelings run high. As you know, too, Shirley Brandon and her husband were particular friends of mine. But, as I said just now," he shrugged his shoulders, "I am here purely as a medico. I felt it my duty to come along. I had no idea but what you might have been dead. Of course, as you now appear to be quite fit," Everett put out his hand. His voice trembled as he spoke. In his eyes there crept a look of fear. "Please don't go, doctor," he pleaded, "that night. But we can't talk here. Won't you come up to the house? My boys will look after your safari." The two men walked slowly up to the homestead. After Everett had spoken, a silence had fallen between them. Each was busy with his own thoughts, and Strang's face wore a very worried frown. "Would you care to walk on ahead?" the doctor asked Everett, when they were nearing the house, "and say that I have arrived. Mrs. Brandon will not be expecting me." "No, no, doctor," the planter said nervously. "I think she'll be glad to see you. Really, she—" He broke off irresolutely, then relapsed into his nervous silence. In a few minutes, they reached the house. "Shirley," Everett called. "Shirley." They heard her footsteps patter around the corner of the veranda. As she recognized Strang, she stood stock still. Her face grew pale. "You," she gasped. "It's all right, darling," Everett interrupted. "Dr. Strang will explain." He turned to the medical officer. "Perhaps I've got one or two little things to attend to. Would you excuse me for a few minutes?" Strang nodded absently. His eyes were fixed on Shirley Brandon. Had he not seen it himself, he would never have believed anyone could have changed so quickly in a few days. But it was a look on her face that held him, a look of cold, stark terror. He recovered himself and stepped forward as he put out his hands. "Why, Shirley, my dear child," he said, "you mustn't look like that, you know." At his words, she seemed to come to life again. She began to laugh hysterically. "I don't care, doctor," she said, in a queer, choked voice. "I love him. I tell you, I love him, and he loves me. I've always loved him, and I don't care what anyone says or thinks." Her voice trailed off into a scream. Strang was just in time to catch her as she fainted. Everett had rushed out, and together the two men carried her into the bedroom. "My big bag," Strang ordered curtly. The planter raced off and returned with it almost immediately. "Thanks," the acknowledgment was short. "Now shut that door and go and play with the puppies until I call you." Then he bent over the unconscious girl and gently lifted her wrist. In a few minutes she opened her eyes. She looked around her and puzzled, then recognized Strang. "Doctor," she said weakly. "Hush, my dear," Strang said quietly. "Don't worry about anything. Everything is all right now, and Dick's only gone to see about my things. Try to sleep a little. Now, just take this." "I'm frightened, doctor. Frightened to go to sleep. Besides, I must speak to you." "Of course, Shirley. But first try and rest a little. I'm going to be here for ever so long," he smiled. "No, I must talk to you, doctor, now," she replied. "If I don't, I'll go mad. Can't you see how I'm suffering? And last night, Dr. Strang—" She suddenly sat bolt upright and stared at him with a terrified look in her eyes. "You don't think I'm mad, do you? Say you don't. And don't let Alec kill me. He's been trying to do so for 3 nights in my dreams, with that horrible Malolo drum, which he makes my little Pierrot doll beat. And then the doll stops and comes towards me. Only it hasn't got a Pierrot face anymore. It becomes black and has the Malolo filed teeth. Its boneless legs trail as it drags forward towards me. I can't escape, doctor. It crawls and crawls and crawls with implacable hate on its foul black face. And when I am exhausted running, its little evil face comes closer, and its boneless legs and hands work like tentacles round my body, stripping me naked. The face, doctor. Oh, my God, the face, small and evil. Then it grows, just like one of those screen fantasies as the camera closes up to some monster. Then, having stripped me to the soul, the face descends, while the tentacles of legs and arms coil like living snakes. I tell you, doctor, he's killing me. She began to whimper. Save me, doctor. Save me. Hush, my dear. Everything will be all right now. Strang tried to soothe the overwrought girl. But I must speak, doctor, or I'll go mad. I tell you, mad. You must listen. That was but the least of it. I'll tell you everything, doctor. Why, I... An hour later, Strang, his lips set in a thin, hard line, went onto the veranda to Everett. His impersonal attitude to the planter seemed to have undergone a change. "She's all right now," he said, "and sleeping like a child. And now, young fellow, let's see if we can locate the cause of your trouble of the other night. Come into my room." "Not a thing wrong," he said at the conclusion of the examination. "You're as sound as a bell." "The pain was very real, though," the other said wryly. "It makes me shiver to think of it. It can't be appendicitis again, can it? As you have seen, I was operated on for that when I was at last at home." "Yes, I noticed that. Now listen, Everett. Frankly, I'm worried about both of you. I'll hang on a few days. If there's no reoccurrence again, well and good. Take Shirley home, though for a spell. She's overwrought. Can you manage it?" "Oh, yes, Doc, that's all right. Dunster can keep an eye on the place for a few months. Can't you give me some idea?" Strang looked away. "I'll be able to judge better in a few days," he said evasively. "You've been here long enough to know that Central Africa is a queer place. Lots of things happen with which Western science is not yet familiar." He turned to Everett again. "I'm now going to ask you a few questions about Shirley. You may not like them. As a doctor, I don't care a damn either way. But I want your assurance that you will not try to hedge when you answer." "Dr. Strang," Everett spoke angrily, "just get this before you go on. I've loved Shirley ever since the first time I saw her. And she has loved me. We had a misunderstanding like any couple of young fools, but we've paid a hell of price before and when she married Brandon. But the debt is quitted. We paid, I tell you, in blood almost. I know that the men up in Zomba don't think much of us, and I know that once I did things of which I am now ashamed. But all that was before I met Shirley. Brandon got her on the rebound, but I tell you, the man's a swine at heart. He lives a Jekyll and Hyde existence. But this Hyde is worse than the original. Nobody knows. Only Shirley. I know you number him among your best friends, but you've got to listen to me now. Within a week, he broke Shirley, body and soul. She tried to hide it at first, for the honor of her caste in a black country, but it was beyond endurance. She wrote to me, and we eventually arranged to meet in Zomba and come down here together, damning everybody and everything. At any rate, she's safe here. Brandon knew. He knows now that Shirley hated him after her wedding night. Why hasn't he made any move since Shirley came to me? I'll tell you. He knows that I'd kill him. I'd have killed him before, the rotten foul swine, if it had not been for her." "Steady on, Everett," said the doctor. "You've answered the questions I was going to ask. Now suppose you get your boys to get my gear up here. I'd like a little rest, thanks, and don't worry about Shirley. She'll be sleeping right through till tomorrow morning." Later on, after a quiet dinner, the two men sat at their ease on the veranda. Conversation gradually died down in the silence of the night. Strang felt stifled, though a cool breeze had sprung up and was fanning his tired eyes. A great weight seemed to be pressing him down. This revelation about Brandon. It seemed incredible, yet medical jurisprudence was thickly dotted with cases like this. And surely, then there was Vereker. How did he come in? An observer, obviously, for he did not appear to hold a brief for anyone. But how and what did he know? He turned to Everett and asked suddenly, "Ever met Vereker, my provincial commissioner, in Mikalongwe?" "Vereker? Or rather, several times," was a surprising reply. "An awfully good fellow, I thought him. See a lot, say nothing type. More than that, he was very kind to me and asked me up to dine with him whenever we both happened to be in Zomba. I appreciated this because, as I told you, the Zomba people have not been as kind." "Oh, had you over to his outfit, did he, after Shirley was married?" The planter nodded. "Yes, it was shortly after that. Quite human he was that time, too. Actually spoke for more than a minute on end. Conventional stuff. I think he was the only man who ever guessed that Shirley and I loved each other. How was that?
Well,
I wasn't within miles of the wedding. Naturally. When I was leaving his safari, he mentioned, apropos of something else, how Shirley had carried a Pierrot doll I had given her, instead of the usual bridal bouquet. I had given it to her some time previously. I expect he had noticed me hand it over. Oh yes, now I remember. He had seen me.
Half a minute.
That doll, it interests me. I've often noticed Shirley amuse herself with it.
You say Verrecker remarked about it?
Yes. Twice, as a matter of fact. When I was saying good night a little later on, he brought it up again. Yes, he said. Come to think of it, it was rather novel, carrying a doll on her wedding day. She's great on it still. That was all, but it told me a heap. Clever fellow, Verrecker, and damned kind.
Why did you ask if I knew him?
Oh, I just wondered. The two men relapsed into silence. The minutes wore on. For once the night was peaceful. Even the sound of Africa's eternal drums seemed placid, almost lethargic. Monotonously, the rhythm rolled across the miles like the drone of a drowsy chorus. Suddenly, without any warning, they changed their beat. The very air seemed stirred as an irregular throb broke their peaceful rhythm, and as suddenly Everett threw himself out of his chair, his face contorted with pain and his body writhing convulsively. He looked like some grotesque human animal in an invisible grip, twisting rope, trying to escape the torture of some gigantic stranglehold. An unwilling scream of agony was drawn through his lips. A strangle leaped up and tried to steady him. The doctor's first thought was that Shirley, thank heaven, was still deep under the influence of the powerful narcotic he had given her. She would not hear her lover. Then he grappled with a tortured man. Everett's head boy came running out when he heard his master scream. With his help, Strang eventually lifted the planner and carried him to his room. He was conscious, but could only whisper weakly, "Doc, it's bloody hell. Do something. But gag me first. I mustn't wake Shirley." Strang nodded as he took out his handkerchief. Then he rushed off for his bag. But it was of no avail. The strong dose of morphia he administered hardly lessened the agony. For 3 hours, Everett turned and twisted in pain. At last it died down, leaving him exhausted and biting on the handkerchief he had stuffed into his mouth.
"My God, Doc, what was it?" he whispered at last.
"It was worse than the last attack. Each breath was a torture, and I felt as if my spine was cracking. I felt as if I were gripped by a pair of vice-like hands and was getting the life squeezed out of me. And did you hear those damn drums of hell roll their devilish rhythm everywhere? Every beat throbbed through my brain in unison with each pang of torture. What is it, Doc? For God's sake, don't let it come again."
An answer? Strang took off Everett's clothes.
"Tell me," he said quietly, "exactly where you felt the pain."
"Here?
Here?
Here?"
Then the planter looked at him in surprise.
"There's not a vestige of pain left," he said.
"I'm only exhausted, and my heart's thumping."
Strang said nothing as he turned Everett's body over. He stared at two red marks showing up lividly in the middle of his back. They were distinct and complete, the impression of two powerful hands, and hammering on his brain was the echo of the irregular throb of the drums, of which Everett had complained. Even as he remembered them, their beat changed, and before his astonished eyes, the red imprint slowly disappeared. Strang suddenly realized that he was in the grip of fear, cold, unreasoning, stark, naked terror. His own voice sounded far away as he spoke to Everett.
"Can't make it out yet," he heard himself saying calmly to his patient, and then in a cheerful voice. "But we mustn't have this sort of thing happen so far away from anywhere."
"What?"
"I'm going to take both of you up to my place in Zomba tomorrow."
"But..."
"No buts, Everett. I'm being honest with you, and I tell you, I regard it as of vital importance. Any details about the conventions can be settled later. They are of no consequence, as far as I am concerned." The two men looked at each other. Then Everett spoke.
"I'll tell Chasila to arrange the safaris for daybreak. Will you see to Shirley?"
The doctor nodded. Then after a moment, "You'd better get off to bed. I want my room. I'll give you a little injection before you go. It'll stop that heart thumping. Oh, and if I were you,
I shouldn't mention this business to Shirley. But Strang did not go to bed that night. For 2 hours he wrote by the flickering light of the hurricane lantern at the corner of the veranda outside Everett's and Shirley's rooms, his chief mail runner squatting patiently beside him. Dawn was almost breaking when he handed the bulky envelope to the native. "Buona verrecker," he ordered curtly, "and run as if the devil was after you." The man grinned as he saluted. "Only 90 miles, buona verrecker, the drums say," he answered. "Tomorrow night, buona, I give him letter." A moment later he was gone. Then Strang, wide-eyed and thoughtful, waited impatiently for the coming of the day. Not till the complete safari was well on the road, with Everett's double machila jogging along beside his, did he relax and snatch a little sleep. There was a frightened look in the medical officer's eyes as he spoke. "I tell you, Verrecker," he said, "it's only a question of days before Everett dies. He's had 4 seizures since I brought him here. Neither heart nor body can stand the strain. Shirley Brandon's horror-laden dreams have already driven her to the verge of insanity. I give them both a month on the outside. Both are physical wrecks. Is there no way by which we can get Brandon, or at least find out what he is doing?" "I can tell you what he is doing," Verrecker replied. "More than that, I can tell you how he is murdering both Everett and the girl. But we can do nothing either in law or out of it. In the first case, there isn't a tittle of evidence any jury would accept. In the other, the doll has put him beyond our reach." "Go back a bit, Verrecker," the doctor said. "I want to know how you found it all out. Perhaps then, between your knowledge of the bush and mind of medicine, we might be able to do something. If necessary, I'll gladly kill him myself." Verrecker shook his head. "No good. I could have had it done easily after your letter from Nazwadi confirmed my suspicions. But that wouldn't have saved your patients. The opposite, in fact. The doll, you see, it's like this. I had spotted the fact that Everett and Shirley Brandon had been in love with each other, and when I discovered Brandon, I mentioned 1 or 2 little things to Everett. I'd found out, through Brandon casually boasting, that he had learned the secret of the drums, that he was leading a double life, white by day, black by night. He was too well up in native ritual and things like that. News came to me one day that a white man was heading the obscene initiation ceremonies of the Changuru not far from Brandon's place. As you know, no white man, unless he's gone native through and through, can get near these ceremonies. And one morning I saw Machila carrying him back from one of these orgies. He was slobbering at the mouth from the physical reaction. He had been married only a week. It was not hard to guess that his wife would run away, though naturally I was not in a position to voice my suspicion. No woman could stomach that, even though she could not guess the actual extent of the evil. She had, however, to feel the reaction. I thought I'd given you a hint, but you misread it. Still, the point is not that. Brandon is breaking no law. After his wife went away, more news percolated through to me via my native intelligence branch. Real evil news about him. He had taken up blood brotherhood with the Changuru. You know how they exchanged their blood. And he had also devised a new sadistic dance. A doll dance. That was her doll. And Everett, see? The Changuru, at their initiation and certain other ceremonies, have a kind of cult of Isis, black mass type of ritual. And the doll, to an almost unlimited evil extent, became literally a limb of Satan. You know the tag. There are more things. And then he began to use it. This effigy type of revenge has been in vogue since the days of the first pharaohs. It is something Western civilization will shut their eyes against. The Orientals do it with a goldfish which has been injected with a drop of the proposed victim's blood. Sometimes they starve the fish or get it gasping for want of air. There are many things you can do to a fish, including biting it in two. Anything that happens to the fish, the victims feel. Pleasant, isn't it? Over here, however, blood is not necessary. Original ownership is sufficient. Changuru and Sinayo voodoo is sufficiently strong. Of course, a drop or two of blood makes it ever so much more effective. Well, the news came in about the doll. Can you picture the bestial lewd sadistic dance led by Brandon and the Pierrot doll? and each time the dance took place to the throb of the drums, Brandon crushed the doll to himself with a vision of Shirley and Everett for Urge. "See, suppose, as you suggest, we kill him. What happens then? Who revitalizes the doll? Only the death of the person on whom the juju lies can do this. And what he does to the doll, the devil does to Everett." "My God, Verrecker," said the doctor. "Can nothing be done? The monster must be insane. Worse, when Shirley resisted his lust and sadism." Suddenly Strang sprang to his feet. "I've got it, Verrecker. I've got it," he almost shouted. "That's the clue. The word insane. But first, if I certify him insane, can you arrest him?" "Why, of course," was the reply. "But they, the doll?" "I'll explain as we go along. I can arrange for the doctor here. I've already consulted him to look after Everett and Shirley Brandon. He will keep them under chloroform when the next attack comes. How soon can you leave?" "Within the hour. My safari is always ready." "Good." Strang was almost his old cheerful self when they set out for Brandon's estate, but at the thought of what was lying before him he grew serious again. During most of the 3-day march he went over his plans with Verrecker time and time again. The commissioner, as if regretting his recent verbosity, merely kept on nodding his head in answer, but there remained a look in his eyes that was not pleasant to see. They caught Brandon unawares. Central Africa, as Islet had remarked to Strang, was not, thank heaven, Europe. Securely bound, Brandon raged for hours, like some caged beast. Later he grew calmer, but his captors took no notice of him. Patiently they waited for the night. Slowly, at first and gradually louder, the drums began to throb. "Hurry, hurry, hurry," they seemed to call. "The jungle gods wait." As the hours wore on and the drums maintained their insistence, a change came over Brandon. His face twitched and grew bestial. His voice became a snarl as his lips curled back over his teeth and gums. He began to slabber. And still, the two others waited patiently, while the drums kept throbbing out their inexorable message. Then Strang left the room. "Let me go, Verrecker," Brandon growled. "Just this once. I swear to you I will." "Where's Strang gone to? Strang? Strang? Come here!" For an hour the prisoner pleaded, whined, and cursed in turn. At last, Strang came back. In his hand was the Pierrot doll. He held it tenderly, almost preciously. As he sat down, he nodded imperceptibly towards Verrecker, who slipped away to the vacated room. The commissioner smiled as he carefully gathered up the litter Strang had left behind, the remnants of the black coat Brandon had worn at his wedding. Pieces left over after Strang had entirely recovered the Pierrot doll, a syringe and a solution with which the medical officer had infected the cloth. He smiled again cynically as he recalled how assiduously Strang had attended Brandon when he had bitten his lip till it bled, after he had first begun to rage. He put the remnants very carefully into the kitchen fire and watched them burn till the end. Then he rejoined Strang. Brandon was now screaming, "My doll, Strang! Give me my doll. I'll admit anything, cannibalism, anything, if you give me my doll." His voice changed. It became cutting. "Listen, Strang," he said, "because I am blood brother to the Changuru. The drums have told me what is happening to Everett and Shirley. I offer to save them if you give me back the doll. My doll is a sacrificial doll now. It's vital. It's living, Strang. I'm willing to remain bound, but let me only hold it and send its message. Can't you hear the drums calling for the juju of the doll dance? Give it to me and loosen my arms. Keep my body bound, if you will, but give it to me. The drums are insistent. Strang, can't you understand?" Strang looked up at Verrecker. The commissioner nodded. Then the doctor turned to Brandon. "Here's your doll. Remember, you offered me the lives of Everett and Shirley. Remember." Brandon held the doll quietly for a moment. Slowly he stroked it, as if it were a living thing. Its legs, its hands, its slim, elongated body and arms. As he stroked it, it seemed to smile. Brandon's face lost its snarl. He began to eye it as a cat eyes a mouse. Slowly his hands worked along the Pierrot, up and up, till they reached the doll's throat. With a wild cry, he turned to Strang. A maniacal laugh burst from him. His voice grew frenzied. "Watch, Strang, watch," he screamed. "See what I will do to Everett and her. Every pang the doll suffers. 100-fold will they bear it. Look." He took the doll by the throat, while his insane strength gradually exerted its full pressure. For a moment nothing happened, but Wrecker and Strang stood like graven images. Then slowly the long, boneless hands of the Pierrot lifted themselves. The little face became convulsed with rage and bestiality. The hands crawled along Brandon's arms, stretching themselves as they moved towards his throat. Like the tentacles of an octopus, they groped their way upwards. Then they found what they were searching for and held fast. The legs spread downward in unison. A look of horror spread over Brandon's face as he realized what had happened, but it was too late to relax his own fixed muscles. The pressure increased. Gradually, Brandon's grip grew weaker as his heart failed to take the strain. The doll's head, no longer held so fast, began to move. Its tiny evil mouth slavered as it pulled itself along till it reached the hands. There was a slight sound as its teeth clenched on something. For a long minute it hung there. Then it dropped to the ground, the limp thing of rags it once was.